Hey, Dr. B.
Hey, Luke, what's going on?
You know, I've noticed lately in lots of my sort of interpersonal relationships with people that I really struggle to communicate honestly what I'm feeling with people, and it's affecting relationships. I was hoping maybe you could talk me through that a little bit.
Yeah, I really appreciate you bringing that up, and honestly, it's something I'd be very curious to explore a little bit more on how your life experience, and particularly as a man, has impacted your feelings around this. A lot of times we haven't.
Being vulnerable with other people isn't easy. If you struggle to communicate what you feel honestly, maybe you just need to talk to somebody. Check out Modern Therapy, a psychology practice here in Houston driven by one overarching mission: to cultivate a well-lived existence despite life's inherent challenges. Check out mymoderntherapy.com to make an appointment with Dr. Beatrice Craven or one of her associates. Again, that's mymoderntherapy.com. From Milieu Media Group, this is The H, a podcast about the people and places that make Houston, Houston. I'm your host, Luke Brauner, and this is Season 3, Episode 4, Fully Fashioned, with Claire Drennan. In the winter of 1991, I was an insecure, feathery-haired, bespectacled sixth grader at North Oaks Middle School in Haltom City, Texas, a suburb of Fort Worth. I'd recently transferred over from the other side of the school district, Birdville ISD, leaving all of my friends and 11-year-old confidence behind. I was now surrounded by strangers who all seemed to know each other. They'd spent kindergarten through fifth grade together, making memories and building a shared understanding of the world around them. I didn't know their names or get their jokes or have any idea about where I was supposed to fit. I also didn't understand the way they dressed. They all seemed to care so much more about their clothes than any of my elementary school friends had. And they all seemed to like the same brands: Gap and Guess and Polo and Z Cavarici. I didn't own any brand name clothes. I mostly wore hand-me-downs from my older brother Josh or the clothes my grandmother gave me at Christmas each year. One thing I distinctly remember, though, about that sixth grade winter, and this is a little painful to admit, but I owned a different turtleneck sweater for every day of the week. That's not as embarrassing, though, as the fact that I somehow believed wholeheartedly that my owning so many turtlenecks was a reason to feel pride. Friends, I thought I looked good. Thankfully, I eventually realized the error of my ways, but I can't say that my fashion sense ever made any drastic leaps forward. Fashion just never really mattered to me one way or the other. In fact, it's only been since the launch of the Netflix reboot of Queer Eye that I began remotely paying attention to what I wear from day to day. So I was a little curious how things might go when I sat down to interview the very fashionable Houston transplant, Claire Drennan.
So I'm Claire Drennan Jarvis, and I am the one-woman show behind Claire Drennan Knits. I am a fiber artist. I'm a textile designer and clothing designer.
Claire grew up in East Tennessee, near Knoxville, in a small town called Maryville.
Maryville is population around 20,000, one high school located in the foothills of East Tennessee. It's beautiful. I didn't know how beautiful it was until I left.
Another thing Claire didn't realize about Maryville until she left was the degree to which it lacked cultural diversity.
We had different families with different backgrounds, but we had like one of each. So the net effect of that was like total assimilation from my perspective. So like I knew that they had a different background, but I didn't really get to experience that the way that you would in Houston, where people who have different backgrounds can meet with one another and like kind of celebrate that side of themselves. So in Maryville, you know, we had like some Japanese families, and like I knew one Mexican family, and they were just like us.
The us she's referring to is her family.
I grew up with both my parents. My mom was a stay-at-home mom when I was growing up. My dad was, or is, a gastroenterologist. So they were professionals, and they wanted me to get a good education and were very supportive of that. I have two siblings that I grew up with, and then I have a half-sister from my dad's first marriage, and another half-sister from my dad's third marriage.
Even as a child, Claire was always driven towards creative things.
I was a theater kid. I was really into theater and into voice. I took voice lessons. I was always in the choir. I was always in the school play. and that was my creative outlet. I did also love fashion, and I used to draw fashion plates all the time, and I wrote once that I wanted to go to Pratt Institute like Betsy Johnson and be a designer, but I never saw a working artist, and so I ended up going to school for history because I had a really amazing history teacher who, and you know, it was something that I could see.
At what point did you realize that you were gifted artistically?
Wow, I mean, I don't know that I've ever said that I'm gifted artistically. Like I said, I was always very passionate about theater and confident in, I don't know, I just kind of believed that I deserved to get the good part, and then like it manifested out of that. So I don't know, it just grew out of passion. My mother's artistic. She paints and does clay. She likes to do watercolor, oils, oil pastel. And she was always dabbling. When I was in middle school, you know, she had been a stay-at-home mom, and she decided to go back to school for interior design. And she was mother of three young children and going to the University of Tennessee to study interior design. And I just saw her with her Prismacolor pencils and making these models. And that was really inspiring to see her doing that. That was a good thing. And then, I mean, my parents were very supportive. I always loved to sing, and they were always pushing me to do so. And they had me in voice lessons from an early age and just really, really supportive in that way. Show choir before it was cool.
Claire's home life took a pretty significant turn during her freshman year of high school when her parents' marriage ended.
That was a very formative experience for me, because I learned a great deal of empathy, and I also learned that like two things can be true at once, that everyone's entitled to their version of their life and they can exist simultaneously even when you might think they'd be mutually exclusive. So they ended up doing this thing where we were living for 1 week with one parent and the next week with another parent, which was very interesting. I kept all of my shoes in my car because I had to have the right shoes to go with my outfit to high school.
Besides her parents' divorce, Claire really enjoyed high school. She was able to explore different creative outlets and felt supported as she began figuring out who she wanted to be.
Lots of voice. I was Emily in Our Town, highlight of my high school career, I think. I sang in the adult choir in the community and the Messiah. That was really wonderful. I was voted most unique, which I think really meant most accessibly unique, but I was honored by that distinction. And, you know, I think that I took advantage of the place where I was, which was East Tennessee. So a lot of hiking and outdoor activities. I had a season pass to Dollywood, which is an amazing theme park located in East Tennessee that, of course, Dolly Parton put into place.
Despite her various creative interests, the most influential character in Claire's high school experience was her history teacher.
Mr. White was my history teacher. He wore Clark Wallabies, and he was a family friend, and he was super nice. He had a guitar, and he sang songs, and had all these multimedia presentations, and he made history really interesting. It really kind of drove home the point that it was about storytelling. I love storytelling. So that was really inspiring. And that's, you know, eventually what I ended up studying in college. And I really think it's because I just saw this man who had a cool job, who, you know, made my life interesting, who was dealing with interesting subject matter, and that seemed like something that I would like to do.
When Claire graduated high school in 2002, there was no question in her mind about where she'd go next. Charleston, South Carolina.
I went to college to study history at the College of Charleston. My mother's from South Carolina, so I really, like, I claim both Tennessee and South Carolina because we spent a lot of time in South Carolina growing up. We would always go to this beach called Edisto, which is just like a family beach. It used to have just all these little beach shacks. It's getting a little fancier these days. And so we would go into Charleston, and like ever since I found out there was a school there, I was just like, that's where I would like to go. It's a beautiful town. I wanted to study history. They had a great program. They also had all the other things I was interested in at the time. So, you know, at that point I thought I might be an opera singer. So, yeah, I went to the College of Charleston. They offered me a full scholarship, so that sealed the deal. I have family history in Charleston as well. So my grandfather grew up in Charleston in one of the, like, iconic row houses with his mother and an extended family. And during the Depression, his father died unexpectedly. And his mother had, I think, 6 children. And she couldn't keep all of them with her. So she kept the oldest and the youngest. And the rest of them she put into an orphanage, a Catholic orphanage. They were Irish Catholic. And that's where my grandfather grew up, in Queen Street Catholic Orphanage, where he said he had a wonderful time, that the nuns were great, that they didn't know they were poor, that they took field trips. And he went to Bishop England High School, which was located across the street from my first dorm in Charleston.
While still small, Charleston was at least 4 to 5 times larger than Maryville, with much more of an urban feel and significantly more cultural diversity.
It's so hard to parse, like, who I am now from who I was then, because of course now when I look at my experience there, I've learned a lot since. So, I mean, when I look back at Charleston, like, I mean, I understood, like, how segregated it was, for example, but I don't think I truly understood how segregated it was. Like, I did not make any African-American friends at the College of Charleston, and that, I mean, I wish that that were not the case. I think that's indicative of, like, what I was mostly exposed to, but I wish I could say otherwise.
Were you still interested in fashion at that point?
I was. I mean, I always expressed myself through my clothing. You know, I think I was voted most unique in high school because I like to wear weird clothing for the area. So I do have this funny memory from my freshman year of high school where I'm wearing this outfit that I was very happy with myself for wearing this outfit. It was like a skirt that I had thrifted and then these Esprit ballet shoes that had like little straps. And I'm in the bathroom and I'm lacing up my little straps and this girl comes in and she laughs at me. And then like another girl comes in and she laughs at me. And then I go outside into the common area and like 6 girls make a little circle around me and start doing ballet moves and they call me ballet girl. And I was like, am I on an episode of Saved by the Bell? yeah. So, I mean, I always expressed myself through fashion. That was always like a really important part of how I presented myself in the world. And my family has always made fun of me because I will remember specific life events by what I was wearing. But I just think that that is really like another language, just what you wear. At least for me, for myself, is how I express how I'm feeling that day, how I want to feel comfortable in that event, in my own skin, and like taking the combination of like the setting of where you are, the weather, and then like your personal style and putting that all together. That's always been a source of joy for me. I don't actually do a lot of shopping. I mean, I thrift and I save up and covet items that I know are sustainably produced and will last a long time, and then I purchase those. And so when I get ready for like any sort of event, it's always like I go shopping in my closet and I'm like, oh no, I don't have anything. What's it gonna be? And then I'll figure it out. And then that gives me like a great sense of accomplishment. And then I will go to said event and I'll just be feeling really comfortable with myself the whole time.
So that was still true in college, though?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think I was still finding my stride, of course. Like, you don't know yourself very well at that age. So it's not that I look back and I'm like, wow, you really had it together, Claire, on the fashion front. But it continued to be a way that I expressed myself, yes.
Although fashion was still an authentic form of self-expression for her, her sense of style did evolve between Maryville and Charleston.
I think that dress code is always about like where you are and who you're with. And I'm pretty good about being myself, but being comfortable in that moment. So like I've lived in a lot of different cities and I feel like probably dressed differently each time, but also been myself. So, I mean, Charleston is really preppy and colorful. And, you know, I think I dressed the part, but made it my own.
After her freshman year at the College of Charleston, Claire felt ready to expand her cultural horizons a bit more.
My sister and I decided that we needed an adventure. We'd never been anywhere. And we had like a little bit of money and we both had taken like some Spanish. So we were like, let's go to Latin America. And Costa Rica has really good public relations. So, you know, we were like, well, that's the Switzerland of Central America. We'll go there. It'll be great. And so we went to Costa Rica and we did like a homestay that we found on the early internet and did a language program. And then we had a month to backpack around. And that was my first time outside of the country. And it was really eye-opening and transformative, and I learned, you know, a lot more Spanish than I previously had, and I just was opened up to the idea that, like, there's so much more world out there that I didn't know. So then my senior year of college, I did a study abroad in Chile. You know, it was really like Trujillo, Spain, or Santiago, Chile. I always liked Latin America. By that point, I was studying Latin American history. So I was like, well, that just makes sense. So I went down there. It was really lovely. And then I came home. I finished my last semester of college, worked for a summer, and then moved to Chile.
Claire's move, the fall after she graduated in 2006, was the result of her falling in love with not only the Chilean culture during her semester abroad, but with a Chilean man as well.
He was originally in Santiago, but he was a mining engineer, so he got a job in Antofagasta, Chile, which is in the north. It's the second region, so it's like close to Bolivia and Peru. So we moved there. It is a town that is on the coast. It is in the Atacama Desert. It's the driest desert in the world. So this is like a city that's on the coast, 400,000 people, and it's so dry that there are no cactus. And it's like right next to the ocean and no cactus. So, I mean, one of the greatest accomplishments of my life was a total immersion in Chile. So, I mean, I didn't allow myself to have English-speaking friends for like the first 4 years that I lived there. So I was speaking Spanish all day at home, dreaming in Spanish, working in Spanish at different points. I did all of my coursework for my master's in history in Spanish, defended my points, and yeah, I really just, I'm not sure what drew me to that, but it was a beautiful challenge and I really enjoyed it.
About once a year throughout her time in Chile, Claire would travel back to the U.S. to spend time with her family. But she got in plenty of family time in Chile as well.
Chile is really, it's really a country that's all about family. Since I was part of a family there, as any Latin person that I think can tell you, I mean, like, life is just a set way, like you're in a city where you have all of this extended family, and it is always going to be someone's wedding or baptism or anniversary or housewarming or just Sunday lunch. And I really learned to live life in a different way. So my family is scattered here in the United States. We speak on the phone, and when we do get together, we have like quality time where we are like, we are having quality time, and we're being very mindful about that, and we're having very like specific discussions, and we're catching up. But when you live with people every day, and you will do so for the foreseeable future, and you have always done so, like the quality comes from just that quantity or just from that proximity, just from having people like be a part of your landscape. And so it took me some time to understand that and to truly appreciate the art of just enjoying someone's proximity. But I really enjoyed that.
Claire spent much of her time in Chile continuing to pursue her education, working on a master's degree in history.
My thesis was like about this idea of the campesino, which is like the rural dwelling person, like a worker in a rural setting, and how the idea of this person was appropriated by different political groups for their own messaging. So like the way that the Communist Party talked about this person and what they wanted and what their desires were versus the Christian Democrats. No one was really asking this person, this was my thesis anyway, what they wanted. They were like speaking for them, through them, having them be like a manifestation of their own like worldview. I finished all the coursework and I was working on my thesis, and I was going into the basement of the National Library every day and like making all these little notes and reading microfilm. And I just found it like very difficult to take all of these little ideas and little pieces and build them into something cohesive. I think that one of the things that I was struggling with about like the study of history, like in the postmodern times is that the thing that drew me to history was like the stories, like the sweeping narratives. And now the thing that you spend your time doing is like breaking them down and saying like, well, it was just really complicated, which is something that I believe and like informs me to this day. Like I do believe it is complicated, but it's just not as much fun. And you can't really talk to that many people about what you're doing because it like it, you just focus and focus and focus. And then in the end, there's like five people in the world who can have a conversation with you about the thing that you're studying. So I began, instead of working on my thesis, I was teaching myself how to sew. I was working with local people in Chile to like both learn how to sew and make like my dream wardrobe out of the materials that were available to me. That was kind of the thing that had my attention at that time. I met the mother of a friend who had learned how to knit when she was coming up in like Catholic school, and she was super fast, and I would draw her a picture and I would bring her yarn that I got like in the South. Or one particularly fun project was this sweater that I bought in Valparaiso, and it was this like raw wool. It was gorgeous wool, but it was really loose knit, and like the design of the sweater was not great.
So her friend's mom took the sweater, unraveled it, washed it, and then knitted it up again into a new sweater that Claire had designed and drawn up.
It was really gratifying, and it turned out awesome. So she made several pieces for me, and I mean, I had always loved wool. I'd always loved knits. I just, like, they're comfortable, and then they have, like, this intrinsic whimsy about it. So that was really gratifying.
Claire's newfound or perhaps reawakened love for fashion design would eventually follow her all the way back to the U.S.,
My partner at the time got into MIT, so we moved to Boston, and I still hadn't finished my thesis, and he said, you know, you really love this design thing, you should pursue that, and so I found a certificate program at Massachusetts College of Art and Design, and I enrolled and spent the 2 years in Boston, like, learning. I mean, I sort of knew how to sew. I'd taught myself a little bit, but there was a lot to learn.
Did you love Boston?
I did love Boston. It's a beautiful town. Also bikeable. And, you know, I had a really interesting experience where I, you know, was living on campus at MIT and just enjoying all of the lovely activities that are available to students there, and was exposed to a lot of interesting people. Actually ended up co-founding a little, I guess, a startup there called DeScience. So I met two women who were, one of them was an immunologist and the other was a neuroscientist. And we co-founded DeScience Research on the Runway. And the idea was that we were going to like give a visual representation of scientific research so that people could talk about it and care about it in different ways, like because we're living in such a visual world. So I was the fashion director, and we recruited fashion designers to work with scientists who were doing scientific research. So we made a science catalog, and we put like a blurb about what the scientist was doing and some images from their work. And then the designers would like choose which scientist they wanted to work with, and then we matched them back. And we ended up producing this really large-scale runway show at the MIT Media Lab that we had 45 teams, so 90 people total that I was interfacing with for a year. And then we produced this runway show. We live-streamed it. We had, like, Nobel laureate on our judging panel, as well as some other really amazing people. And I think it was a really great experience for our scientists, is what we called them. It was a deeper relationship for many of them. Like, so it wasn't just like, oh, this is a pretty picture, here's the thing that I made, but they really got into the research and learned a lot about it, and some of them made some really interesting presentations later on. There was even another startup that came out of one of the teams, so that was really rewarding.
Another rewarding part of Claire's life in Massachusetts was the beginning of her formal training as a knitter.
I am a person who enjoys a classroom setting. So when I was at MassArt, they didn't have a knitting program, but I found the Summer Textile Institute at the Rhode Island School of Design, and I signed up for a 2-month course. I took Knitting 101, and I basically just had access to their what they called the yarn closet for that entirety of the time. It was more like a yarn garage. It was like all the yarns that you could ever want. And they taught me the basics of machine knitting. And I got to do like a lot of swatching and figure out like what worked and what didn't work, what yarn I liked, what yarn I didn't like. It was amazing.
In 2014, after 2 years in Boston, Claire and her partner relocated once again, this time to Houston. A year later, their relationship ended, but Claire had already started establishing herself and her new fashion line in the city.
So when I came to Houston, one of the first things I did was look for studio space because I knew that I had just finished my program and I knew that I wanted to start my own line. I knew I wanted to learn more and keep growing. So I came here to Canal Street Studios, where I've been for 4.5 years. And really, Canal Street Studios is the beginning of most of my relationships in Houston. I have met people who came to work here or through people who came to work here. It's really just been like the nexus of everything. The first year that I was here, I was working on DeScience. I was doing like a lot of administrative tasks and I wasn't producing as much as I would have liked. And then slowly, like as the years have gone by, so I've been working on Claire Dernan Knits, but being around artists every day for 4 years, really kind of, like I said earlier, I didn't meet a working artist until I was like 30. And it never really occurred to me that like I might also want to produce art. I don't know. I feel like I'd never been exposed to that I'd never been like given permission to try. And so, you know, being here at Canal, I have just kind of started to move in that direction. So I've been making fine art pieces. I mean, I don't like to draw like a firm division between those two things, but basically it's normally I've been working on the body. And when I do fine art, you know, I'm working, it's like a site-specific installation or a sculpture or flat art. So it's just a different vessel for the work. Like I said, I mean, I think we're always influenced by the people that are around us. And so I'm so inspired by the people that I see over here and the work that they produce. And I wanted to try my hand at it. So
what was that first piece for you?
The first piece that I made is a large knitted piece. It's blue. And then I have knitted into it holes that take on these kind of graceful shapes. And the title of the piece is Blue Sky. And it's like 10 feet tall. It goes on the wall and it just makes you kind of look up. It gives you like a sense of vertical space, and it is both literal and kind of whimsical.
What inspired that?
I think my process is really inspired by the materials. It's like, what can they do? And like, I'll kind of discover a new technique or make up a new technique. And then I'm like, well, can it do this? Can it do this? Can it do this? And so this was coming out of like a swatch that I made with some yarn that I got from a lady in my machine knitting club. One of my families in Houston is the Houston Area Machine Knitters, which has been in existence in one way or another since 1972. I joined right after moving to Houston. I am definitely the youngest member, I believe, currently, but it's a great community. They know so much. I can always ask them my questions, and I actually get a lot of my best ideas from those ladies.
Claire spent her first year in Houston continuing to work on DeScience. But throughout that time, she was also hard at work on the first collection for her new fashion line, Claire Drennan Knits, which she entitled simply, Carrots.
So the first collection that I did was inspired by this children's book that my family used to read at Christmas. It's called Christmas Present from a Friend. And it's this beautiful book that was printed in Japan in the 80s. And it's these animals living in the snow. It's very soft, very cozy, and it had all of this nostalgia. So my first collection that I made was inspired by that. And it was like sweaters and beanies.
You said it was called Carrots?
Carrots.
Why Carrots?
Because in the story, there's a bunny who finds two carrots in the snow, and she eats one. She's no longer hungry, so she pays the other carrot forward to another cute animal. And then the carrot is paid for it again and again until the bunny wakes up from a nap and the carrot has returned to her.
Since the release of Carrots, Claire's designed two more collections, entitled Electric Quietude and Sunshine, respectively, as well as produced several fine art fiber pieces. But a significant amount of her time these days is spent on the less hands-on aspects of creative entrepreneurship.
So my principal focus right now is with my business with Claire Drennan Knits. I mean, there's a lot of hats to wear with that. Like, I'm doing all the designing, all the sourcing, all of the marketing, all of the sales, all of that. So that takes up most of my time. And the art is what I do to kind of just relax and express myself. And, you know, some of the techniques that I learn in the art, like, they'll end up in my collection. So they're really, it's really all about like having a creative outlet.
What was it that really hooked you about this particular type of craftsmanship?
I mean, I like knitting, I think, because it's all about texture and because there's kind of like an intrinsic whimsy about it, that it is comfortable, it's cozy, it moves with you. And I also like the eco aspect of knitting, the fact that it is knit to shape. So like there's no cut and sew, there's no waste, nothing is thrown away. What I do is called fully fashioned knitting. So you are actually like knitting to shape. So you're making the shape of the pattern piece, the shape of the scarf. There's no waste, there's no cutting or sewing. And so there's a lot of research and development that goes into like, what does the tension need to be? Does this stitch work? Like, how do these pieces go together? You know, so you never get to make something once. It takes quite a bit of time. So originally I was making everything myself, but I discovered that that is very time consuming and I'm trying to grow my business. So I have been working with a mill that's located in Texas that is helping me produce some of my pieces now. So in addition to like, I do a lot of swatching and figuring things out here in my studio in Houston, I do make some of the pieces myself, but I'm also doing a lot of back and forth with the mill and seeing like what works and what doesn't.
One of Claire's highest priorities in the work that she's doing and the brand that she's building, and something that she works hard to include in every step of her process, is sustainability. Producing things in the most ethical and environmentally friendly way possible.
Right now I'm working in recycled cotton, which is a pretty cool material that I source. It is got all of the benefits of cotton without like the high footprint. So instead of using thousands of gallons of water to get like a kilo of cotton, it's zero. So they take, like when you make your t-shirt, you take a rectangle, you cut out the t-shirt, and then there's all this leftover stuff. There's a company that collects that and they collect it from industrial sources. So it's sorted by color. They break it down, they turn it into like a new yarn without having to like dye it or grow it or fertilize it or water it. So it has a very low environmental impact. Currently, I believe the number is that 2% of our clothing is made in the United States, which is pretty low. I mean, the reason why that is, I mean, it's just economics. So it's more expensive to produce in the United States because you have to pay people more. But that's something that is important to me. I feel like, I mean, one reason is because of, you know, regulations and environmental impacts and just knowing that like those safeguards are in place. But also I just feel like it's important that we still are able to make things, you know, and I like to keep things close. If it's not necessary to ship things, yarn from one place and then ship it like across the world and then like ship the final product, it's just crazy to me.
Here's what's interesting to me. You talked about your love of storytelling and the way that fashion for you is a means of expression. And now you're creating fashion for others. So essentially what you're doing is offering other people a means by which they can tell their story and express themselves. I'm curious like how conscious that is for you in what you're creating. Does that make sense? Like, to what extent are you creating the pieces that just come to mind? And to what extent are you thinking like, a human being needs a piece for when they feel this way?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really interesting question. I mean, whenever I design my pieces, of course, there's a part of me that's designing for myself, like where would I wear this? What would I do in this? But I do think about like, who is my ideal customer, you know, and what are they trying to say? And so, you know, I think that I use a lot of like soft geometry. So this is a person who, you know, enjoys like making a statement and like having a little fun, but she also appreciates like a quiet silhouette. So it's like a combination between like minimalism and then just like exuberance. And, you know, I try to design pieces that are practical and comfortable and that you could wear into any situation and feel good. So yeah, I mean, I think my products are maybe a little niche, you know, like maybe they're not for everyone because they do have a certain feel about them. My goal is for Claridryn and Knits to be kind of part of the solution to what is fast fashion, what is like 2% of clothing being made in the United States. So I want to grow. I want to, you know, have this be like an option for people who want to make conscious consumer decisions.
And how does that work? I mean, how do you get it in front of people?
That's a really great question. So I've been at the stage where, you know, I've been doing local markets, your Renegade Craft Fair, your Wham, and I do enjoy those very much. My next goal is to do more wholesale and retail, which is a new challenge for me.
What keeps you in Houston? Why do you stay?
I stay in Houston because I think Houston is where I became an artist and where I grew to know myself. And Houston offers diversity. Houston offers a lot of community and a lot of opportunity in terms of art. And I think that like the area that I'm working in, like the handmade space and the locally made space, I think there's a lot of room for growth and continued growing support. So I think it's a good place to be positioned. Personally, I've seen a lot of creatives who, you know, have gone and tested the waters elsewhere who are originally from Houston, and they're coming back here. So that gives me some confidence that I have chosen a worthy city.
While I may not have the same experience with fashion that she does when I look in my closet each day, I do know how the need for self-expression feels, as well as the difficulty when others don't understand that self-expression. I admire the courage I see in Claire to not be disheartened by others' inability to see what she sees, to live life in fervent pursuit of that which she loves most deeply, whether it be a Chilean mining engineer or the perfect yarn, to choose the more difficult path of sustainability in building her brand when there are easier ways forward, simply because it's ethical and right to do so, and the courage to chase the dream of being a working artist, even with no one leading the way for her. Claire Drennan is brave and humble and talented, and Houston is a better place because she's part of it. Thanks so much to Claire for being a part of this episode. As we approach what's always a very busy season, I want to wish you and yours the happiest of holidays, however you may celebrate them. We'll be back with plenty of bonus content between now and the end of the year, and we'll return in January with Season 3, Episode 5. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening, sharing, rating, and reviewing this show in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. This episode was produced, edited, and mixed by me, Luke Bronner. Our artwork is by the fine folks at Field of Study. Check them out at fieldofstudy.design. Our theme song is by Robbie C., and other songs featured in this episode are by Cameron Pissera and Scott Benton. This and every episode of The H is brought to you in part by Pink Cilantro, a social-first digital agency focused on marketing, branding, and all kinds of other great stuff. Check them out at pinkcilantro.com.